I want to come back to the practice of Shikantaza. Trungpa Rinpoche, as many of you know, talked a lot about spiritual materialism. And what he meant by that is using spirituality as a way to fortify our own sense of self and to fortify our barriers, actually, against the world. And one of the primary ways, or the primary ways in which we do it, are what he called the three lords of materialism. The first lord is the lord of form, and that is the perpetual search for comfort and security, unending search for comfort and security and pleasure. This is in his book on spiritual materialism. Now, how is that spiritual materialism? Because we use our spirituality to try to secure our comfort, to fortify our sense of self, and to ward off unpleasant things in life. We actually use spirituality to do that. And from his point of view, if you're pursuing a spiritual path where that's what you're doing with your meditation, is basically just simply trying to build up your own sense of self, you're not only completely wasting your time, you're actually doing something very harmful to yourself. Because, you know, if we try to live an ordinary life, things don't work out, you know, we fall ill, or our relationships don't work out, or, you know, it's just life is painful. It's in our face, and we go, okay, fine. And there's still the spiritual path outside of that that we could look to. But if we take spirituality and we co-opt that into that process, then that's what we think spirituality is. It's a way of feeling better. And then there's nothing out there. There's nowhere else for us to look because we've already co-opted spirituality. Many of us spend a lifetime of so-called meditation, and really what we're doing is this other thing. And, you know, he found it among all of us, you know, that he worked with. And it doesn't work because you don't grow and you don't go anywhere. You just keep recycling whatever your thing is. You keep recycling the books you're reading, the ideas you have, the relationships, you know, everything that could be spiritual is now fed into the machinery of ego. It's horrible. The Lord of Form is feeling, trying to feel comfortable, trying to feel secure all the time, and unwilling to deal directly and nakedly with discomfort, with insecurity, and with pain. The second one is the Lord of Speech. The Lord of Speech. And this one refers to developing our conceptual mind, more and more and more sophisticated ways of handling and domesticating anything that could make us uncomfortable. And everything gets fed into the hopper. And this is what I'm, you know, talking to Carrie about. And all of us who are thinking type people, this is what we do, become incredibly sophisticated. And basically what we do is we're handling the message of non-ego so it doesn't look like non-ego anymore. We're handling pain and we're justifying it so we don't have to actually relate to it. You know, it becomes, well, I'm on the journey and, you know, today I'm having a bad day, but I'm on the journey, I'm making progress, and we're making ourselves feel better by doing that. See what I'm getting at? Rather than a direct, immediate, naked, non-conceptual relationship to pain, discomfort, insecurity, whatever it may be in our life. Now, when we practice Shikantaza, uncomfortable, discomfort. It's really hard to work your way around that one. Lord of Form is not going to be able to get his thing going with you when you practice Shikantaza, because you're constantly working on the posture, you're constantly in the space of discomfort. And very hard to tell whether the discomfort is your ego feeling claustrophobic or whether you actually feel physical pain. It's really hard to figure it out. Unless you have like an injury or something, or some, you know, excruciating pain, that's different. So Shikantaza really addresses the Lord of Form in a very direct way. But the Lord of Speech, there is room in Shikantaza to be using your intellect, your strategies, the things that you've learned, all the books you've read, all the philosophies, all the techniques, the healing techniques, the psychological techniques. You can be sitting in Shikantaza and you can be doing this other thing at the same time. You can be using your strategies and techniques to try to get through the session. Now, the thing is, if you do the practice properly, that's not going to happen, because the minute you start pulling in a technique, you know, to relate to your inner body or whatever it may be, the minute you start doing that, if you're really in your body, you realize, whoops, I lost it. And you come back to the posture. Then you lose it again, you come back to the posture. But if you are super sophisticated, you've read a lot of books, and everything in the universe somewhere fits into your system, you can keep going forever doing Shikantaza. And you're not really doing the practice at that point. You're sitting in the posture, but you're actually now practicing. You're thinking. And even if what you're thinking about is trying to get to a particular experience that you remember, you're still thinking. So here's the key thing for all of us in the room. And this is, you know, you framed this question very precisely. You know, should we simply let go of everything we've learned? I'm sort of generalizing a little bit from what you said, and the answer is yes. That was very perfectly put. When we sit in Shikantaza, we truly have to let go of everything we've learned and everything that we are afraid of and everything we expect. And the way to let go is actually to identify with the posture itself and the actual literal, non-conceptual experience of sitting in Shikantaza. Whether that experience is largely physical one, or, you know, perhaps, you know, you're just, what you feel is nausea, and it also could be more on the emotional level, you know, that there's a sort of mood that pervades your body. You know, that counts. You're not thinking, you're feeling. Feeling is not a very good word, because what we do in our culture is we separate out all these different kinds of things. Well, there's sensing and there's feeling and there's, you know, there's thinking and there's intuition and there, you know, images and memories. But from the Buddhist standpoint and from the Taoist standpoint, there are actually only two kinds of experience. One of them is what's called non-conceptual experience, which is a direct and naked experience of your life, where there's no intervening veil of concepts or interpretations, even on a fundamental level. And the other kind is, and that's called primary knowledge, and that's the knowledge of the Buddha nature has of the world. That's the knowledge of the heart. It's the knowledge of the body, direct non-conceptual knowing, experiencing. And the other one is experiences mediated through what we think, and that's not direct. You know, at that point, our experience is what we think. And it's insidious, because we think we know what we're experiencing. At that point, you're gone. It's like, hello, come back. Well, you know, I believe that I'm experiencing reality. Hello, come back. The mind that is in contact with reality does not think. The state of being that's in contact, direct, non-conceptual contact with reality, does not think. There's no thinking going on in the sense of thinking about. Thoughts may come up, that their experience simply is energy and they don't go anywhere and they don't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Literally, you look at it and you see energy when your thoughts come up. They don't mean anything. Rinpoche used to call them rat shit. Rat shit. Whereas if you just experience your thoughts as what they are, which is a very subtle burst of energy, they're fine. There's no problem whatsoever. You experience them directly, and you may use them later if you're teaching. But even when you're teaching, you don't listen to yourself when you teach. As a Dharma teacher, you don't listen. You don't listen and you don't comment. You know, and it goes like that. And you definitely don't believe what you're saying. So, shikantaza really means you identify with the posture and you follow the breath, be with the breath, but you don't do anything at all. Now the thing is, that's the state of practice. That's the practice of pure awareness. Now, in our present state, there may be moments of that, but generally we can't do it. And we don't do it. You know, of course our ego is totally activated by shikantaza. It makes our ego go nuts, being in a place where it can't feed itself. And so we do things, but the thing is to catch yourself and come back. Now at that point, that's not really pure awareness practice. It's not really shikantaza per se. What it is the pathway up to this practice of pure awareness. And that's the journey. I mean, there's no problem with that. You know, in Chan Buddhism, you know, same thing. You work with your tendencies to go away and you train yourself to come back over and over and over and over. That's the path, that's the journey. But you do come back. You don't hang out there doing whatever you're doing. You don't do anything, and that's the mirror. And then when you do anything, even the littlest ripple in your thinking mind, you just come back. And that process, you know, begins to bleed into life itself. You can be very ill, and ego's way is, I'm really sick, I really feel bad, this is terrible. You know, I've had this illness. Maybe you have, you know, like a chronic illness. That's ego's way of doing it. And the shikantaza approach is, it's just matter of fact and very straightforward. The body breaks down. Life is filled with suffering. You look around you and you see how many other people, even of your own age, are suffering as you are or worse. It's a much bigger picture and it's very matter of fact and very direct and there's no problem. There's no problem at all. No matter what your situation or condition, life is. Life is not only filled with goodness, life is immensely sacred. And everything we go through is part of that sacredness. There's nothing outside it. And the shikantaza, as I was saying last night, it opens up this very different way of experiencing life altogether. One time, you know, Trungpa Rinpoche was really quite sick much of his life. And he had paralysis from 1967. You know, he was paralyzed, which is very, I'm told, is very, very uncomfortable. It's very, very physically uncomfortable. And then there was just one thing after the other. And he was often in bed. One time he fell downstairs. He was testing his kusan, so kusan, take note. They were going up the back stairs in his house, and all of a sudden he pitched over backward to see if the kusan was paying attention. And the kusan was not paying attention. The kusan was thinking about something else. And he was actually really quite seriously injured. And there were other times when he was just plain sick. And one time somebody said to him, you know, you're really in bad shape physically, really, really in bad shape. And you clearly, there were times in his life when he was in such bad shape that his normal complexion, which, you know, seems like that's really quite beautiful, you know, his color and everything, but he would look black, his face literally looked black with the blackness of death. And he, you know, you could see he really felt really, really bad. And somebody said to him, you know, how do you handle it? You know, it's really a shame. Actually, it was really a shame you feel so bad. And he said, no, it actually isn't. Because now I know what that's like. And now I know what everybody else goes through in life. He, from a certain point of view, he didn't like being this special person, this tulku. Because he said it separated him from life. And he didn't like that. You know, he wanted to know how life is at the basis, at the root. So Shikantaza opens that up for us. It, you know, what we're, you could say, well, we're training to meditate. What we're really training to do is to be. And not to do, even the little thinking thing. I wouldn't say even that. I mean, that's the basis of our suffering. It's always running everything through our judgmental mind. And the third Lord is the Lord of mind. So the Lord of speech is all about thinking and conceptualizing and strategies and all that kind of stuff. The Lord of mind is simply preferring certain states of mind over other ones. And that's a tough one. For those of us who meditate, you know, we meditate because we prefer certain states of mind over other states. And we are intelligent enough and informed enough to know that a mind that is activated, angry, resentful, paranoid, depressed is painful. And a mind that is empty and open and free is very unpainful and something we long for in our practice. That inspiration is actually very, very good, but there comes a time, and that's why, you know, in a way, you work with each Lord progressively. You know, Lord of Form, you work with initially, and then Lord of Speech, and then the Lord of Mind. The reason it's the third one is there does come a time when, as we've been saying here, everything in your life is included in the field of emptiness, to use Hong Zhe's speech, way of talking. Everything is a manifestation of the field of emptiness. Everything is sacred. Everything has its place in the universe, including our own torment, our own tormented states of mind. When you begin to dismantle the Lord of form, even though there is still pleasure and there is still pain, in fact, even more so than there used to be, more vivid, more real, more unavoidable, more naked, that is experienced as the universe's way. The center of the universe at that moment is this. So, Lord of Form. So even when you're doing your Shikantaza, be mindful of your desire to, even in a very subtle way, manipulate your experience in the direction, the desired direction. Generally speaking, the desired direction is positive. But there are some of us actually who have become so accustomed to pain and claustrophobia that that actually is our security blanket. And there are some of us who actually prefer, we're actually terrified by the notion of actually being empty and open. And we would prefer to be small, shrunken, and closed, and chock full of junk. So when you sit in Shikantaza, be mindful of the tendency to try to engineer a state of mind that makes you, whatever your comfort state of mind is, you know, you're trying to engineer that. So basically, when we sit in Chikantaza, the practice is to be in the posture fully and be leaning into it. So your intention is toward the posture. It's toward letting yourself dissolve into the posture itself. And to be mindful of the breath, not in any deliberate way, but just to allow the breath to be part of your experience of the posture. Because the breath is physical. It's a more subtle manifestation. And to not do anything, just wait, just wait, just wait, just wait, just wait, wait, wait. If you can wait for 1 second, you can wait for 45 minutes. And if you can wait for 45 minutes, you can wait for a year. And if you can wait for a year, you can wait for your whole life. And if you wait for your whole life, it will show up. If you can wait for your whole life, you can wait for eternity. That's what the world does. That's what the stars do and the galaxies. Waiting far from leading to nothing, which is our terrible fear, it leads to everything. It leads to the very abundance of life that we all seek. But that abundance, of course, comes with a price, which is that the ego is revealed to be nothing more than an avoidance mechanism, a delusional line of thinking that separates us from life. So the practice in Chikantaza is wait, and then wait another second, and then you go away, come back, and wait another second, and wait, and then life happens, and we see how it is. And pretty soon we have no more use for the small self or the thinking mind. We have no use for it. Thinking mind is very sacred as long as we don't co-opt it. But unfortunately, as humans, we do co-opt it. So, you know, we're not minimizing the importance of these various strategies that we've developed, physical, intellectual, and spiritual, if you want to say it. However, we eventually begin to be strangled by our thing, because like we come into an environment like this and we just keep doing the same old thing, fitting everything in and, you know, trying to be comfortable without breaking the rules, and because breaking the rules is uncomfortable, so then therefore we keep the rules, not because we're necessarily understand, but we don't want, you know, we don't want to get in trouble or whatever it may be. And then we take, you know, the practices and we sit here kind of doing our own little thing with it. It's a problem because we're not opening the floodgates of who we really are, and we're not giving ourselves a chance. It's understandable in ordinary life that we do that, you know, and that's why we need periods of retreat and practice, both group and individual, so that we can explore what it's like to set aside our own idiosyncratic approach and see what happens. And then we do see what happens, and what happens is actually very compelling. It may be scary, but it's also very compelling, and there's something in us that yearns for that. So I just want to encourage you that, yes, we are, we're all being invited to set aside these strategies and these approaches and these techniques and this idiosyncratic personality that we've developed for a time here. Set it aside. That's what Chikan Taz is all about. You set aside all three lords of materialism, and you literally wait and see what happens. And as I'm sure you have noticed, things do happen. And the things that happen come out of nowhere. If what happens is something you've seen before, then it's not happening. It's still your mind. It's still your thinking mind. But if something happens that you absolutely have never seen before and is completely unexpected and fresh, then you're setting aside the three lords enough so that your deeper person can emerge.